listening. Thank you for downloading. You're with us here at the Clock and Talk and Arsenal podcast. I'd like to welcome a couple of the guests tonight. And as always and every week, we have Tony. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, good, buddy, good. Our other guest is a guy that you've seen on Arsenal Fan TV at time to time, often talking about transfers and Arsenal. Look, he broke the news, Aubameyang. That's all I can say. He basically said before anybody knew about Aubameyang on the table, he was on anyway. Well, welcome him. Jack, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. That was a bit of a tongue twister there. You follow Jack at The Plug AFC. Jack, I'd just like to go through what we do with all our guests, mate, is we just go through a little couple of few questions called My Arsenal, and just to get the listeners to know a little bit about you and how you started following Arsenal, mate.
So my dad's Arsenal mad, and that's really where it comes from. I mean, it's like a tradition in the UK, and I'm not sure if it's a world thing, but when the family of their firstborn, they have a picture of a family member or a sibling, or if it's not a firstborn, then they have a picture of a sibling in the cot. And my dad's in my cot, and I was my parents' firstborn. I had a picture of Nwankwo Kanu. I've always been around Arsenal. It's always been something that's been close to my heart, my dad's heart. And I've always looked up at my dad. And the one thing I've always loved the most growing up is always going to football with my dad. I mean, my first game was an Invincible season. And it's my earliest memory. It was the 4-2 against Liverpool. So arguably was one of the most important games in the history of Arsenal, because obviously we've got knocked out of the FA Cup and the Champions League and all looked bleak. And then being 2-1 down at half-time, to see Thierry step up and Pires won the game 4-2 was something that pushed us on for what was and what is and will stand and always be the greatest achievement in football history, which was the Invincibles. And I'd always idolised Thierry my whole life, and seeing the va-va-voom, if I can make the joke, but see how he used to just run with the ball and how he used to turn a complete situation where you would not see anything coming out of it to then result in a goal out of nowhere was something that I always thought was fantastic. And I always used to, like, I remember as a kid, because I'm obviously born in the millennium in 2000, ironically also my birthday is actually the 3rd of the 4th, which is obviously the Invincible season, but obviously I was 4 then, but I remember going on the pitch at Highbury Odds that game. I was walked on Gunnosaurus, and I remember just watching how Thierry used to score these top corner goals and always have his socks up. So I always used to get jokes upon when I was, like, for example, in the under sevens. This is Henri's. This is when Henri was captain. I'd always make sure my socks were at the highest they could be, and I'd always try and score screamers, just because I always thought a bottom corner goal was never good enough as a kid because Thierry did them in the top corner. And I just idolised the style of play and Arsene Wenger before the drought. And just Highbury, just going there and seeing how you would never expect there to be a stadium, and then out of the middle of a load of houses, there's this one great, classy, beautifully designed structure, and you'd walk up and you'd see the whole of the stadium drop in front of you with the pillars and just this whole culture that used to be Highbury, and it's something that I miss dearly to this day.
Okay, so obviously that covered a lot of your best memories. Now we'll go the other way. What's your worst memory of being an Arsenal fan? Or your worst moment?
So I've actually got three. One would be the day Thierry left. I found that really hard to cope with. But the worst two, they're both games. One of them was my first cup final, which was Cardiff-Chelsea in the Carling Cup, Theo's first goal for us. But nothing will ever be as worse than Birmingham. I'll never forget that. It was horrible. That blunder that was made just was something that was just... So it was the most undeserved way to lose a game, and I found that really hard to go over. The abuse I took for that, being an Arsenal fan, being the only Arsenal fan, because I was 11 by then, so in my class it was being the only Arsenal fan, I got abuse, and it was horrible. I mean, looking at the Birmingham fans celebrating, you know, we lost the cup final, which I hadn't won anything for 6 years then, to Birmingham City, was, it hurt.
Fair enough.
Mate, who's your biggest Judas?
My biggest what?
Your biggest Judas. Yeah.
I would say my biggest Judas would probably be... I've got a few at the end that I think we're level pegging. I think one of them's Stan Kroenke. I think the other has got to be Emmanuel Adebayor, and the other's got to be Robin van Persie.
Okay.
And I think elements also now probably Alexis Sanchez, because I've been anti Alexis the whole season, but the way he came out and made that little boy inside of me s quote when he blatantly said he always dreamt of Arsenal before when he signed for us, just basically showed that showed the nature that was so false and just blatantly copying someone who he knows is so hated because of that statement, and then trying to nip Thierry in the bud for zero reason but to try and deflect the blame, was something that really, really got to me. And I thought it was really disrespectful from Alexis to try and implement as well that Thierry was one of the reasons he left because of his own advice, which obviously now has been rectified by Thierry publicly stating that's not the case. Kroenke, I think, has come here with a negative mindset. I think that he's come here for his own benefit, for his clubs in America, which all underachieve. I mean, his disrespect for clubs as a whole is demonstrated by the fact how he moved his, what was it, LA Rams, like thousands of miles. I mean, that itself, despite the fact that does happen quite a lot in America, it just shows a complete disrespect for the fan base. And I think he's shown disrespect for the fan base throughout the whole time at Arsenal and the whole time in his time in sports, because he won't answer anything. He won't be there to publicise when he needs to be. And I think he's a really weak excuse as an owner, if I have to be honest. I think the takeover, which we'll get onto, I presume, later, is something that's significantly needed at Arsenal Football Club.
Okay. And I think it's the last question in this bit, and we may have one other. Who's on the back of your shirt?
I'm going to get killed for this. So I've always stayed quite consistent. So I've always had Jack Wilshere. But when he went to Bournemouth, I went for somebody who is not the most loved player, Alex Iwobi. And I got him again on the hope of third season. Reason being, I live relatively close to Bournemouth to obviously play there. So when I can, I go to watch the under-23s. And I've always been a fan of Iwobi. I always thought him and Bellerin would make it. And Jeffrey and Adelaide, who since his injury has come back and he's looking on fire, which we'll see him soon, I presume. But with Iwobi, he's not the player that he's got a lot of confidence taken away from him. And I think my point, I've been saying consistently, that Alexis takes his game away from him, has been evident, because I think he's been class since Alexis has left. And I think Iwobi is one that people need to stop scapegoating, because he actually is one of the most consistent passers on the pitch, for example. It's something we don't have, because we've got a lot of inconsistency from like Xhaka, for example. And I think people jump the gun with Iwobi because I think he's actually a very good talent. I remember watching him against Bayern for the under-23s just before we beat them. And it was actually the afternoon that we before the game when we played them, when we beat them when we beat them in the group stages. And the goal he scored from outside the box, I can remember this day, it just rocketed into the roof and then dropped down because it deflected from the bar, and it was just fantastic. But Jack Wilshere is one who's always been my consistent, and he'll be going straight back on it as soon as next season, because I've loved Jack. I've been so pro the point that he's wanted to always fight back, and everyone doubted him into Bournemouth. And I think that him, as I've said, and I've got space for it first, Jack for captain is something that needs to happen, because he's the only one with a heart and desire, but equally he's a world class centre midfielder, and I don't care what Southgate says because he's delusional. Jack Wilshere has to be starting at the World Cup for England, and I don't think it's even a question anymore. I think he's proven all the haters wrong.
Okay, well thank you, Jack, because you've just gained all our Nigerian listeners back, mate, so thank you very much. Okay, let's get on to some transfer news now. And Aubameyang.
So, basically, as I've been tweeting, and as others have also, and others are starting to realise, it's been a very complex situation with the transfer of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. We've been in constant discussion with him, his dad, his agent, and also obviously Borussia Dortmund. But quite a few issues have occurred in terms of just complexities in relation to the ownership of the club and the tragedies that were the attack on the team bus.
Yep.
So as I tweeted on the 23rd, a deal had been agreed for him for around 58 million and plus add-ons, but in pounds. Basically, the controversial people basically saying that, well, then why did he play and why have they omitted it? It's basically, it's agreed, but it's not physically signed as a confirmed, like, agreed deal, because they respectfully ask us to wait until after the court hearing, because regardless of the fact that it doesn't make much of a difference to actual deal, Dortmund requested that we hold off until after that, due to the nature of what happened and the fact that Aubameyang and Bartra were giving evidence. That hearing was actually moved forward as well, which the court agreed due to knowledge of the deal, hence why it's now Monday and not later in the week. Also, publications, as I've been saying, have been limiting their knowledge, because it doesn't do any favours for Dortmund and us for the deal to be that publicly spread. Because obviously in Germany, all clubs are owned partly by the fans, and they're on the stock exchange. And it, for terms of the value of the club shares, it makes sense to, I don't mean leak false information, but like give away less obvious hints, if that makes sense. So like, stating anything, to be a bit more like negative on the concept of a hint, why, for example, Wenger basically went from confirming it to then saying it's better I don't say anything, and also why Yo Pierre, you want to come here's edit to the end was taken down and re-uploaded 3 days later without that included. So I think that's now,
I'm just thinking Dortmund, they, you know, it's getting very close to the end of the window. They've got to make a replacement for a striker if Aubameyang does come to Arsenal. How do they go about getting a replacement?
So Olivier Giroud was going to be a separate part of the deal, but linked. So if they couldn't find a replacement, then Olivier would have gone on loan for the rest of the season, just because he wanted to leave, because he wants to guarantee his place in the squad for the World Cup. But it's got to a stage now where there were issues with his wife, but nothing that significant that couldn't have got resolved. Like whether Giroud could go there or not for a 4-month loan, 6-month loan, it's still possible. Wenger even said Giroud will only go if someone comes in. But then again, it's only a loan, so people need to stop worrying, because Giroud wants to stay at the club, but he just wants to get in the France team. But also with the situation on that front, it's got to a stage now where Dortmund don't want him, the fans don't want him, the players even have admittedly said they've given up. Abraham doesn't want to be there. So, I mean, I think they're more pro the idea of him leaving now than ever before, especially since their game.
Okay. Tony, you got any add on any of that, Mike?
On the Giroud's wife, she basically said she's staying here regardless. Obviously, so he could go on loan, and it's not uncommon for players to move away without their wife, which may surprise some, but it does happen quite regularly. But obviously he's had issues in the past with infidelity, and obviously I don't know this 100%, but from what I can gather, her "you can go but I'm staying here" was a woman saying, "don't you dare fucking go." There obviously has been reports about his wife not being on board with the move, and it was just essentially she said, "I'm not going, you can, but don't you dare," essentially.
Adding to that, the point about that it's not uncommon for that to happen. I mean, Alex Song went away, his family stayed here, still went to school here. Arshavin, the same. And it is frequent because a lot of the players and their families live around Hampstead. They're all based around there, and they have a nice life. The kids will go to good schools, and I think that they don't want that to be disrupted just for the sake of a short deal or something, when the players can really more or less come back once or twice a week. I mean, even players like Crouch, when he's at Stoke, he lives in London, he only goes up to training 2 or 3 times a week. As weird as it sounds, his family all live here, he's here. I see him around quite a lot, actually.
So on Arsenal Fan TV, you're pretty confident that Aubameyang is going to be an Arsenal player at the end of this window. Are you still confident?
I mean, everything I've said and everything that the reasons of issues that come about have been made evident by the way and the clubs are acting and the way the media is acting. I mean, if you look at it all, the fact that they're having to cushion it from the media and the fact that the court hearing was removed earlier, I mean, it all indicates very strongly that the deal has been agreed in principle, just not as I think it was Tony that said, signed and sealed. Because the signing sealed is when they actually physically sign off the agreement. And that obviously will take place as soon as they're ready to let him fly to London, which I presume will, theoretically, most likely probably be Monday night or early Tuesday morning, based on the time frame we've got to complete a medical and whatnot. And also, we've sent out the big four, and especially when they're not meant to start full time, all of them together until February. And I think it indicates that a deal is there to be done. And if there wasn't, they would have come back and they would have attended the semi final as well, because obviously it was a big event for the club. And I think that at the end of the day, why would you want to bring in, after spending money to release all of their contracts, why would you want to bring them all in and then the very first deal when they're working early is a failure for the sake of a few million, which is controlled by Gazidis because he works with sponsors? And obviously there's a debate going on there separately, but I think that it would be, it's quite poor to suggest that the deal would fall through when they're still there and it's their first big deal and they're with the reputations they have. I don't think the club would want to let them down on that front, because they want to show a push forward into the right direction to the future of the club positively. And if they fail with this deal, with this new approach, then people are going to ask some questions whether the new approach is exactly the same as the old one.
And Gazidis walk away with egg on his face if this deal fell through, wouldn't he?
Exactly. And equally, Hugh's family's there, and he's quoted by the club to be there to finalise the last part of negotiations. So why was he there in the first place? Because he's not one to be a football man and whatnot. He was with Team Sky before in cycling, and I think that alone indicates that there's very strong grounds that the deal is taking place as well. And I think that even Balague coming out saying that his rider don't have money is just the most inaccurate statement that somebody could make, and that shows that it's being deliberately like leaked to push that away.
Okay.
Yeah, just to add on that quickly, I've messaged a few journalists that I know, big name journalists, really. I'm not on here to name drop, but they've basically said, and I think a few people know this, that the club have literally locked up for the last 3 days and like nothing's being leaked at all. And it's why we've pretty much seen no information for the last 3 days. And usually when Arsenal do that, it tends to mean something's happening. But that's why the press is, there's been so much guesswork in the last 3 days, and that's why the press have been contradicting themselves, and Balague is all of a sudden saying, he's not sure if we can afford it. Because as far as the press are concerned, they were basically told that a deal was going to be done, so everyone was leading with that line. And then suddenly for 3 days, they've not been told anything and nothing's happening. They're just sort of making up reasons as to why it's not happening. But that is due to literally a complete lock-up from Arsenal. And it's why I don't think I've seen any new information for 3 days. Pretty much, even in the German press, and German clubs are quite renowned for having close links with their press. Obviously, everyone knows about Bild and whatnot, but yeah, it's just been a complete lockup.
There's your regular puppy dog.
And then, adding to that, actually, the funny thing there is that it's actually such an inaccurate, not trying to be like disrespectful to Balague, but it's a stupid thing to tweet when we got a bid rejected of in excess of 90 million. When we were told we can spend what we sell, and then we've gone and sold another 30 million worth of players now. So, basically, we should have at least 120 million in the bank to spend on players. So, to say that we don't have enough money to fund the deal, and we haven't actually made any paid signings this window, is actually laughable.
Have a few people jump the gun when they say done?
Well, I know I'm not the greatest at phrasing stuff, but for me, when I say done, it's all agreed. It's just, as Tony said, signed and sealed, and that it's a matter of when this calling is over, as we agreed to respect them because of the nature of it. They should get signed the document saying it's been agreed. Dal Bamang should be on his way to London for a medical and whatnot. And I've been told that there's also been alerts made to hotels as well for sorting accommodation and whatnot as well within the area surrounding London Colney with Arsenal renowned accommodation for players.
Okay. Another player being heavily linked to Arsenal, but I believe he got injured yesterday, Evans. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it's definitely someone we're interested in. I mean, Wenger's always been very public about his knowledge and his views upon Johnny Evans. I think the deal would make sense. His clause that's being leaked, about the 3 million if they get relegated, which is a possibility, would mean we push them to sell. And a player plus cash bid is what's being said in the media. It's something that I would think would be something that would be very appealing for West Brom, especially Pardew's admitted he's open to sell. And I think also with Arsenal, Laurent Koscielny, despite the fact he's still a good centre-back, his injuries are something that's quite consistent. And I think that having someone like Evans, who could, let's say, play one of the two games we have a week, would be something that the club would look for. So I don't think he's a long-term target, consistently playing, but backup option. But then again, I don't know too much on that in terms of his injury. I've got to be honest, I've been paying more attention to Aubameyang, because Aubameyang is one of the five, statements I've got going for me, which one of them has been proven correct now, which was the Walcott actual amounts, which were opposite to what the media were saying. They were saying 18 million. I was saying it would be 20 with 2 to 5 million in add-ons, which was 20 million plus 5. But
With all due respect to yourself, Jack, and I'm not doubting that you have sources and you've got sources in the club.
It's more just logic as a whole. It makes sense that it'll be taking place.
Yep. No, totally agree. But look, and let's just hypothetically say this Aubameyang deal doesn't come off. You're putting your whole name on risk, eh?
Well, I've also put my name on the fact that Ozil and Jack will be signing, and those ones I'll be saying first, and also that it's likely Wenger will be leaving at the end of the season. Well, not likely, he will be shifting off, and that, to be fair, I was correct about the appointments that were made, and there has been a lot that has gone my way. So, I mean, look, everyone makes mistakes, and I think it's fair to say that I've been told the stuff's going on. It's very Arsenal to have a very last-minute issue occur. I'm not suggesting that at all, but that's not me doing the deal at the end of the day. As in, the only reasons I can see for anything that wouldn't happen is as severe as a circumstance of, let's say, an issue with Aubameyang's flight, or if he got injured, for example, like mid-medical, and something went wrong that way, or they found an issue with him health-wise. Like, I don't see any reason as to why the deal wouldn't take place, and I think that the way that everyone's acting suggests that the deal is what I'm saying it is to be.
Oh, look, and I take my hat off to you, mate. You know, you've approached yourself and you've come on, your name's Jack, you're right there. You're on Arsenal Fan TV most weeks.
It's not like I'm hiding behind, and this is no disrespect to
absolutely Mowley. Absolutely.
It's not like I'm not allowing people to know who I am. I'm public. Everyone knows that I go to Arsenal Fan TV. I'm go home and away. I don't miss games. And apart from, I can't go to Swansea, ironically, on Tuesday saying that, but it's safe to say that at the end of the day, people could, even if they do, I mean, no matter what happens, every single one of the five, including this takeover, will happen, and I'll still get told it's guesswork. I think it's more the fact that people are bitter because they see the fact that people like to jump the gun, and they won't show any respect to me finding the information out through my own found, just generally, and also using like a logical mind to look at it all. When I'm younger than everyone, and everyone looks at me as a child, despite the fact I'm not. And I think that I think there's a lot of jealousy towards the fact that I mean, I'm not trying to sound big-headed at all, but the fact that I said it on Arsenal Fan TV, I think that's annoyed quite a few people, because people would love to do that and to look at the following, and they think they just judge me because of what my age looks to be, despite the fact that I'm actually not some child that people claim I am.
In all fairness, Jack, I don't think it's you, mate. Like, even I've had information before, and I've put it out there on Clock End Talk, mate, the main one being Chamberlain, that most of our followers will remember. And I was criticised the whole way through when I said, I know he's leaving, and people were telling me he was going to sign a new contract. No, and knew he wouldn't.
Rejected it once before, and it was
But then when he did go, suddenly it's not... You never get the praise. It's, well, what have you done lately? Even if it was only a day ago, you got something right. They're like, well, like, do you know what I mean? So it's not you. And I know you are getting a lot of like abuse because of your age and whatnot, but it's not just that. It's human nature that as soon as you get something right, they don't care. They don't want to go on your past record. Oh, you did get that last one bang on. They want to go, oh, well, what have you done for me today? Essentially.
Exactly. So it's funny you said that, because do you see me replying and getting into arguments with all these haters? I just let them do what they want. They're the ones obsessing over it, or they're the ones who keep tweeting about me. I don't get involved. I don't need to. They're irrelevant.
I do understand people's question.
Oh, 100%. And I've also said that if I was them and I was looking at someone like me tweeting, I think I was a prick. Like, everyone has right to do so. Everyone has right to look at our past transfer records and look at the issues with Lamar and how the club acted and Suarez. But people don't also look upon things rationally. They're very quick to jump the gun on the first three words of a tweet and not the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of
Arsenal fans really did get trolled when with the I can't remember the guy's name. You guys might remember the Benzema bloke who was tweeting, spiking about Benzema heading to Arsenal a couple of years ago. Like
yearly.
So Arsenal fans have had their fair share of trolls on Twitter, haven't they? So, okay, now we've got a couple of questions. Did you want to ask anything else there, Tony?
No, I was just going to, because obviously you spoke about Evans, I was just going to say that, one, I don't think his injury is too bad because it was a hamstring and he played on for another roughly 10 minutes, may have been a bit less with it. And for anyone that's ever had a hamstring issue, if it goes, it goes. I have a friend who plays in a lower league who was out for a week with a hamstring injury because it was just a little niggle, and that could be the case with Evans. We had someone there watching him, not watching him. To be honest, I don't really know what they were doing there, but there was a club representative there in regards to Evans. But obviously, with the big three being in Germany, I don't know who would be doing them negotiations anyway. But it was an Arsenal rep at the game. And the injury, even if it was a severe hamstring, it would only be sort of 3 to 4 weeks. And if you're that hell-bent on getting a player and you rate them that much and you've gone so far as identify them as someone you want, them being out for 3 weeks is not going to cause an issue. And Coutinho going to Barcelona is the main one for that. Like people, I've heard people say, like yesterday, oh, if Aubameyang pulled his hamstring, then he'd fail a medical and we wouldn't get him. But you don't fail medicals on things like that. They know that a hamstring is going to heal in 3 weeks. So Coutinho signed for Barcelona, was it, I think, 3 weeks ago now, and he played 20 minutes the other day.
As he said,
that was a 100 million odd deal. So a medical isn't just, are you fit to play right now? A medical is more looking at long-term issues. So Evans, even as long as obviously his leg doesn't fall off, if we are in for him and it does get to a medical stage, he wouldn't fail it on a bit of a niggly hamstring.
Look at Kim Kelstrom. He was out for months on his loan and he still passed it and still signed.
I mean, he technically passed his medical. They didn't identify the problem until after, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but still,
Just one other player who was of interest early in the transfer window before we get into some questions from our followers, Malcolm.
I mean, I've just never heard so much false news as being publicised. I mean, from what I'm told from the other side, and by that I mean not the Red of North London, there hasn't been any contact since they got bid rejected in December. Like they had, like there's interest, but there's nothing cemented with Spurs at all. And the fact that people were saying that was just literally a month's old information, which never really materialised properly. And I mean, as I've said, and you guys have said, and many others have, there was issues about a loan deal because they wanted him back, we didn't. And I think the likelihood now is if we will go back in for Lamar, but we'll do it after this window. And I think there's quite a few players that Sven's targeted about, I think, 5 or 6 young, really promising players who are playing well in their leagues and in the first teams for their clubs, who he's pipped, who wants to come to Arsenal, and he wants to get these deals done between the end of this window and the summer, because he wants to eliminate any risk of any World Cup based inflation of their values. Mm-hmm. And when the likelihood of us making some signings, like how City did with Jesus in like mid season, it is to like, and that's going to come later on, is something that's quite likely.
So Arsenal are in for Malcolm?
He's one of a number of players we're interested in, and we are likely to be going back in. Well, not likely, we will go back in to try as of this window's over, because obviously right now we've got other priorities for more of a short-term fix to our issues.
Okay. Right, let's get into some questions. El Patron, yeah, good on you, buddy. This kid... Take him serious. Well, we've got him on the podcast, mate, and we have to listen to what he says. So thanks for your comment, champ. Okay. Shez, he's got two questions. If we are to spend big this summer, is it possible to talk about players coming in yet? And if Wenger leaves, who comes in?
There's a lot of information about the future of the club. Question.
Yep.
I mean, look, managers, people are jumping the guns with the whole Ancelotti's coming vibe. Ancelotti would be a short-term fix for what the club want, which would probably, like, from what I understand, is that the club want to go for a completely different approach than what they've ever had. They don't want to have a manager again. They want to run it two separate departments, have like a head coach, and then also have sporting directors and whatnot. And the likelihood is that we'll look to, and I don't know who, I'm not going to name names, I don't know the order, but a lot of the players that we've rejected because of Wenger, who are our legends, the players that are going to be looked to be brought back, so people like Vieira, Bergkamp and Henry and others will be looked upon to come back in coaching roles and high up and well-regarded roles within the club in terms of the future of the club, because they show the history of the ethos of the club and where it was successful in the past, but also they show the drive and the motivation of what players should feel when it comes to Arsenal Football Club, and they're the players that the players playing now look up to, and they had a mentality which is something that I think only Jack Wilshere right now shows in our first team.
Is Wenger going to stay on, you reckon?
I mean, people can say that Wenger's not one to leave a contract early, but due to the way that the structure has been done and the club and whatnot, the fact that Gazidis has basically taken all power as well, I can't personally see Arsene here after the summer, and I'm not one to think irrationally about that. It makes perfect sense for Arsene to be leaving at the end of this window, because everything he's about and everything that he's always pushed for in the club has been taken away from him.
Mm.
And you can see that with the way he's at, the way he speaks now as well.
Okay, Adam has asked, and I have no idea what you've been tweeting, mate, so I'll let you answer these questions. Plug, you said if Aubameyang doesn't come to Arsenal, it's either he crashes the plane or fails the medical. So if he doesn't come, what are you going to do? Plus, you said the sale of Arsenal could be pushed through in the coming future. So why is Kroenke still buying shares?
I mean, I think we'll get to that when we talk about the ticket a little bit more later. But in terms of the Aubameyang, I've very publicly said five different things. I've said Aubameyang, I've said contracts, I've said takeover, I've said Wenger and Theo's fees. So, I mean, I'm not concerned. People will hate no matter what, even if I got four out of five right. But I'm not worried, and I overthink a lot. I'm one to panic generally, and I'm not panicking. Everything that's being tweeted and leaked by online, and all the opinions that are being thread through between Arsenal and also stated by Zorc and also Dortmund's manager, suggests strongly that what I've been saying is legitimate to what's been happening behind the scenes. Because I mean, the evidence is there. People can look irrationally and think, oh, he's a 17-year-old, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But I mean, look, the fact's there. I said they'll be off and they'll give like false information to the media. Not false if they've rejected a bid when they haven't. That's because that'd be paper talk. That'd be the factual documents. That'd be illegal. But that, I mean, like, just talk off the talk of the deal. Like, for example, Wenger going, it's not close, it doesn't help if we talk about it. Like, come on. Wenger the other week was basically, like, did the most Wenger way of confirming a deal. So,
what, just, and this is not a question from the listener, but what made you want to start, telling the stories, the transfer news that you received to Arsenal fans?
We mean to, like, what me publicly?
Yeah,
what Arsenal
transfer was? Yeah, why have you come out publicly to share news?
So this is the thing. It actually stems from Arsenal Fan TV, funnily enough, and getting involved with them, because basically I got my away scheme relatively recently. I wanted to go on Arsenal Fan TV, for example, my ways to just so I could like look back on my own experiences, really. Not for any other reason, not for any self gain, but simply just so I could look back on my just going to my away games. Because that's I love my away days. I mean, it's not something that I hide. I'm very, very pro that. And that was only it. I just wanted to look back on my season, really. And then weeks go by, I started becoming quite friendly with a few of them there. And I kept seeing a lot of negativity with the club just from the comments and other people. And obviously, I've just personally just do a lot of research into sports business, something I'm quite interested in or very interested in. And a lot of the stuff people were saying I found were very wrong in terms of comments and the approach of our transfers with all the new signings in terms of Sven and Sinelli. And it got a stage where I said to Robbie, I just said to him after the United game, because everyone was really negative after he lost, I said, because obviously we were so poor defending, but then we just couldn't finish. Like Lacazette, for example, we kept doing kick-ups in the box, what it looked like, when he could have just floored it past De Gea. Like, little things like that. And I said to Robbie, I said, look, we're going to be fine. We're going to be signing a clinical striker. I've been told it's Aubameyang. And Robbie said that, let's see when something you say actually comes true, Jack, and he was laughing. And I said to Robbie, I said that I've got a number of people who have interest, also like just like looking at the situation generally. And I said that we've had interest before. There's going to be interest. It's a player that is the most equivalent that we can get to someone like Thierry. And he's obviously nowhere near the class of Thierry, because no one will get to that. But if you look at Aubameyang's attributes, he's tall, he's fast, and he's physical, and he's also clinical. And those are the four main positive traits and the best ones that Thierry showed. He suits the Arsenal style of play. I said, Robbie, I said, like, what I said, I've been told that this is something that's going to be happening. And I didn't publicly go on Arsenal Fan TV and start talking about transfers until that, really, which was Palace last week. And up until then, I had about, 400-500 followers on Twitter.
Yep.
And since then, in literally a week, and this is also why I think I've literally completely risen to what's now 5,200. So I wasn't one to publicly talk about it, but it was more the fact that when, basically after Bournemouth, I was driving back, and I was my mate was in the car next to me, and he goes, Jack, you've got to see this. What you've been saying is legit. The press have just come out and mentioned Aubameyang. And I was laughing, and I was like, the people, for example, like mates of mine who I've told, who were criticising me and whatnot, I was like, so what are they going to say now? Because it shows that I'm not what people are saying. I'm legitimate. So that's why Robbie brought it up at the Palace, and that's why I made a little joke with him, and it's all kind of pushed from there. Because I mean, I haven't been one to go and start talking about transfers for week after week. Like, it's literally been two Arsenal Fan TVs in a row, which was last Sunday and Wednesday. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Enjoying it.
Enjoying what part of it?
Well, you're obviously getting a little bit of hate, and I'll say, keep your chin up and don't worry about the hate, mate. You keep doing what you do, and you enjoy doing it, so don't worry about what exactly. People say.
I mean,
mate,
I don't. I don't at all, yeah. Because I mean, I'm level-headed. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not irrational. I don't jump a gun. I don't hold an agenda. I'm not biased to put other people down. I don't put people down on here. The only time I'll ever say something is when people are trying to claim their first something when they weren't, and it was me, because they're taking my credit. And I think that's a fair thing to say, because at the end of the day, I'm perfectly aware that I'm exploiting myself to a lot of abuse, and I'm bringing it upon myself, because I want to say that no matter what you say online, you have to allow people to hate and come back, because if you don't, if you get triggered by that, then you shouldn't be posting online in the first place.
That's right, yeah. And look, when you put yourself out there, when you put yourself out there, mate, someone's going to hate. Just the nature of it.
Exactly.
Look, we'll keep moving on because we'll push through these questions. So Cullum has asked, and Tony, you can chime in on this one as well if you have anything. Are we going after any defenders other than Evans? Also, are we going to be busy in the summer?
So on Evans, Arsenal always have shortlists. It's very rare for any club really to just go after one man if it's something they need, if it's something they feel is essential. The thing is with Evans, we feel that he's definitely gettable. We've obviously had intelligence from his side of the deal, be it his agent, which it usually is, that he would be up for the move. So he's number one on that shortlist, and number two, three and four are very far away because they feel that the number one target is gettable. So is there anyone else we're actively chasing? No, not at the moment, because we believe Evans can be done. He's the one that they want. Will there be other people if the Evans deal were to fail? Then there would be other people on a shortlist. Whether they could get them done in time and whatnot is a different story.
What's your thoughts on Evans? Would you welcome him? Obviously, you'd welcome him, but is he a player that you'd like to see at Arsenal?
I find it quite difficult with this because, well, actually, I don't find it difficult. I've seen people saying, oh, we should go and buy world-class and blah, blah, blah. One, world-class isn't available. Two, world-class would cost stupid money. And three, world-class wouldn't really want to come. If someone can give me the name of a defender who is world-class and gettable for Arsenal, then, yeah, I may be on board. But, I mean, when I've asked this question on Twitter, people have said Umtiti is the main one, but he starts for Barcelona. He's earning more money than we would offer him. Barcelona don't want to sell him because he starts. So his transfer fee would be astronomical. Then he would refuse the deal anyway. So, like, be realistic. I'm not saying Evans is the best we can get, but what we need is someone that is solid enough, has been proven to be able to play a full season in the Premier League, knows what it's all about, and is also quite happy to sit on the bench on occasion because, I mean, I mentioned this the other day, that he would probably be quite rotational with Koscielny, obviously, because of Koscielny's injury issues. So I don't think that would be a problem for him. And he comes in at quite a nice price in this current market. So am I going to say I'm delighted he's the best we could get? No, but I think it would be a good signing, a good solid signing.
Who's that defender Manchester City are looking at from Atletico Madrid?
Oh, he's good.
From Bilbao, Laporte. To be honest, I've not seen much of him. I was saying this to Schwinn and Andy the other day, that over here we tend to only really get a lot of Barcelona and Real Madrid matches. I tend not to stream, so I've not seen loads of him. But I was listening to a report on the radio the other day, and it was TalkSport, for any UK listeners, and they had their Spanish expert on, who also works on Sky. His name's Terry Gibson, and he was saying that he doesn't rate Laporte at all. He was saying he literally just bang average at everything, and they're hoping that there's a solid base to build on because he's average at everything. He doesn't have any real weakness; he's not really good at anything. So they're hoping if they can just improve every aspect, then he'll be one hell of a player. I haven't seen enough to judge, but Gibson was saying that he's definitely not a £57 million player, but he could go on to be that potentially.
Okay.
I mean, actually, really interestingly, there's just been a reporting by Bild about Aubameyang, an update which is quite interesting for somebody like Bild to say. They've basically targeted his dad and him about saying that his dad's pushing for the move and Aubameyang's listening to it. And Aubameyang, who was once wanted to have a great relationship with the press, has now basically done the opposite and has now caused quite a toxic atmosphere between himself and them. And that should a move happen, he needs to be aware that could follow him. And I think that the fact that they're targeting Aubameyang, and also the fact that they're all passionate and related to Dortmund, I think that kind of shows that something's about to come out. Because they've never really attacked him before.
Okay, I'll watch that space. Okay, we got a guy here, and I've seen him do a couple of promotional videos to say that you're coming on tonight, Jack. So he may be a friend of yours, buddy.
Funnily enough, I know who he's talking about. The guy always tags me and Moley and everything.
Yeah, I seen it earlier. It was a video.
Funnily enough, he's actually one of my original followers.
I've never actually met
the guy in my life, but he tweeted me about 2 weeks ago now that he made a bet that if Aubameyang signed for Arsenal, he doubted me at first. If I remember correctly, he basically said that he would get me a 14 or whatever his number is Aubameyang shirt, despite the fact I couldn't put money in the fact it was 14. But Aubameyang shirt when he signs for Arsenal, so he's always, and he's been one who's been really positive and one who's always supported myself. And I do really appreciate that, because a lot of people have been very fake with my phone, have been slagging me off at first, and now they're suddenly jumping on the bandwagon, all the plug, and at the end of the day, it's my original followers who are the followers who I wish I had consistently, because they've been there since. I mean, I never wanted my Twitter account, I never had intention of my Twitter account to grow exponentially. Like, I'm not one to want anything like that upon myself at all. It's just that I like giving information about my club, and if people want to listen to me, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. I'm not claiming to be ITK. I'm just saying that I've got people who just give me information. I'm happy to just be genuine. I'm not gonna lie to people. I'm not gonna do anything.
You're happy to share what you hear, and if they don't like it, don't look.
Exactly, but equally, all the people I hear from are people I've found myself, and they're not anyone that I've known for a consistent amount of time. They're people, because I've done work in sports. I've done a lot of work in not related to the club, but like related to the whole point of football as a whole. I've done courses at universities abroad and whatnot, and yeah.
Okay, now since we mentioned him, at AFC 1886, Corey, K Korey. And his question is, who are a few potential targets for the summer and who can you see replacing Wenger?
I'm going to say the same thing I've been tweeting. Right now isn't the time to talk about our summer targets. I've tweeted some of them, just expect a lot of young players who you guys won't necessarily know, but we will be putting in bids of £40-odd million in for. And don't slug it off, because Sven's aware of what he's doing. He's got a proven track record, and stop worrying when there aren't the big names. I think, if I had to be honest with you, unless we sign maybe one in the summer, I think Aubameyang could be one of our last big name signings for a while. But that's not saying that we won't be signing the same sort of quality as well.
Okay. And once again, Tony, you can chime in on this one as well, mate. And I'll flick it over to Jack, because he's hanging this guy. I think he was DMing us when this podcast is out. So, ABD, update on Evans, we've done. Aubameyang, we've done. Why we didn't sign Malcolm and Pavon and Siri, I think that's how you say his name. Would we go for Butland and these two players in the summer? We'll go, Tony.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm so bored of talking about Seri.
Every
single podcast, I've told everyone that Arsenal were never, ever interested. His agent was offering him around every major club in Europe. I know we're not a Champions League team this year, but we're still seen as a major club. And no one took up the option. He had a £40 million release clause. He was seemed to be quite close to joining Barcelona. I don't overly know what happened there, that he didn't end up going, obviously. But no one was interested. But his agent contacted clubs, and suddenly everyone decided that he would be perfect for Arsenal and then blamed Arsenal for not getting the deal done, when in reality they weren't ever trying to get a deal done. He was offered to them. They said no. That was it. On Malcolm, I think Jack explained it all earlier, that he was, although he seems a good player now, is seen as also one for the future, like one that can improve. So if we're looking to spend now, then there's obviously targets that are ahead of him. That's not to say the club don't want him. And I would be, I agree with Jack in that I think we will go back before the summer, but in an aim to sign for the summer window. I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking to them in February and March to agree a deal for the summer. Butland, again, I've said many times before, we inquired in the summer. They said no. By all accounts, Liverpool inquired in this window and, again, were told no, 100% not in January. So it seems he'll be available in the summer. It'll probably come at a hefty price. And for the price they will want, I'm assuming they're going to stay up. I'd imagine they'll be looking at around £40 million if Pickford went for £30. And I think there's probably better out there for the price they'll want. So
I think we have better.
Who?
I really would anti the fact that we let Martinez go on loan.
I'm not a fan. I think he's good with his feet, but I don't think he commands. Yeah, I like Butland, but I just think for £40 million, it's a bit rich. And I tweeted the other day that I think Timo Horn, who plays for Köln, he'll be rumoured and he'll be amongst one of the top choices. Again, Sven's obviously got a big history in Germany. He's got some weird clause where he's going to be available pretty cheap. And obviously, he would want the move. I don't see Martinez as the answer. Obviously, others do.
It's more for this season, though, because, I mean, this stat alone, people can say that it was pre-season and all this. But look, Cech hasn't saved the penalty for us. Martinez won us a penalty shootout against Bayern Munich, who were playing proper players. I mean, I think that alone, I don't know why we sent him out on loan, because I think he could do a better job than Ospina. I mean, I'm not a great fan of Ospina simply because I think he does things which exploit him to mistakes, like punching the ball out, for example, is something I'm categorically against in football.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Ospina, but I think, for me, he's more solid than Martinez. Martinez, it comes down to the age-old argument, and I've spoke about this to people before, that at what point do you play someone who's slightly worse but has the potential to be better? I mean, Wenger spoke about this in press conference, mainly about Holding, that, okay, he may know that Holding's worse than Koscielny or Mustafi, but he's never going to get the chance to exceed their level if he doesn't play. But the problem with the Premier League, football in general, but mainly the Premier League, is that we deal in the here and now. So if we were to lose 2-1 to Swansea and Wenger said, look, I was playing Holding to get him experience, in the long run, this will be good for us. everyone would literally hammer him. They'd call him senile and blah, blah, blah. But in a way, it's half true. If these players aren't getting the chance, then they're never going to be able to exceed that level. There's reports today that if Evans comes in, hold on loan, which could be a good thing for him. But I think the problem we have, and it obviously relates to Martinez, is in football we deal in the here and now, and the here and now is that he's not better than Cech or Ospina.
It's very interesting that you said that, actually, because I actually got a lot of hate for saying that on Arsenal Fan TV. I said after Bournemouth that it's really quite wrong, if I have to be honest, that the club would take off. You know, the substitution when they brought, well, they actually went to two centre backs and split up Holding and Chambers, because really like it when they play together, because they. But I think people misheard my point there, because I think in football, one thing that does that's something that stimulates quality in a game is if players have a good chemistry, and they both do, and equally they're both players who. A bit like when Koscielny and Mertesacker, when one of them was injured, they could only really play with each other at their best. And it was from that point onwards that our point in that game demised, because I thought we were playing all right at the back beforehand. And I think that people are very easy to jump the gun about experience, when actually I think Holding and Chambers both have the potential to be the old rock English centre-backs that we've had in previous decades. If I have to be honest, if they can be given the opportunity. But consistency is key, and you're not going to be able to grow if you don't play consistency, especially as a defender, because you have to be playing consistently for that confidence, which will make the player grow.
Yeah, so as I said, that's where difficult, where especially the Premier League, but football is so immediate. We want results now, we want everything now. Then these players don't get a chance to grow, but then you'll get hammered for not bringing on the players. Look, Chelsea's a prime example. They've won the league twice in the last 3 years. And because this season they're not going to win the league, everyone's bemoaning that they have all these youth players that they're not playing. So, but no one was moaning about that last year when they won the league. So it's a difficult balance, and it's one you can't really win, to be honest.
I'm going to run through a couple of these questions because there was a little bit of a thread going here. So it was with Messi Hut Ozil and MAA Gunner. Yeah. I don't know where they get these names from, but anyway, they're good listeners and they're good followers, so I'm not going to start taking the piss on their names. But anyway, look, I'll just run with this little thread and you guys can chime in at the end. If Aubameyang is done, this is the Messi Hut Ozil. If Aubameyang is done, then he would have been ineligible to play against Dortmund. Doesn't mean he won't sign, but does mean he hasn't. My question, why say it's done when it's not? If he's signed for us, Dortmund will be fine. MAA Gunner chimes in, he hasn't signed, he's agreed to sign. So it's done if we don't pay that what they want, it's off. And then they chime in a little bit more. So, what do you want to add there, Jack?
Can I just jump in quickly on that one before,
Jack? Do you want to do the whole classic Oxlade-Chamberlain, Alexis Sanchez thing that we keep to be like...
Well, I mean, even beyond that, the ineligible bit to play, he's got that from... There's someone, I'm not going to mention names because I can't bother to get in an argument, but there's someone that's hated that we're starting to get quite a lot of listeners, so they criticise everything we do. And they tweeted that last night, and he's literally just copied what they've said and put into us about being ineligible. Of course, if a player had signed, he would be ineligible to play for another club. But had he signed, you'd see him on Arsenal.com with a shirt above his head. But if he's going to have a question, please bring up an original one, not something ridiculous from someone that clearly doesn't like us for whatever reason.
In relation to that, I mean, also like Japanese cars aren't the most consistent, let alone them who sound like it.
Well, that's why I said it was a bit of a thread, and I thought we're not going to get bogged down.
Can I add on to the answer that was given? I'm going to say this again, and it's starting to wind me up how often I'm having to say this. I feel like I'm either going schizophrenic or I'm turning into a parrot. But listen, I'm going to say this to everyone here. The deal's been agreed. The bid's there. It has not been signed off, as in it's an agreement of a deal. That will be signed after the court hearing, which everyone's accepted. The deal's not the issue. The money's been there. It's all As we've said, that the club's on lockdown for a reason. It's not, there's no bid. If there was a bid, we wouldn't be on lockdown because we want to feed out information to put pressure on Dortmund, to put it that way. And with the whole situation about being eligible to play, I'm going to say this again. Days after Ox started against Liverpool, he signed for Liverpool. Alexis Sanchez left the team hotel during the night when Mkhitaryan agreed that part of the deal. Alexis Sanchez had agreed his section of it. And the irony there is, if he didn't, he probably would have started, knowing Wenger. So for people to keep jumping the gun there and saying that is, as a now apparently known Arsenal fan, Donald Trump would call fake news.
Okay. Now, here's a regular of ours, Vish, and he's got a couple of questions. With Kane and Pochettino now linked to Real Madrid and the FA Cup draw resulting in replay prior to our away game to Tottenham, would this be the opportune time to play Spurs as they could potentially fatigue and not be in the right frame of mind?
Right. I'm going to say this with hope that this doesn't come back and bite me. I'm not worried at all for that. I know I'm really setting myself up there, but I'm not concerned about us at Wembley, nor am I when we have players like Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang who use the width of a pitch when Aubameyang's renowned. Sorry, when Wembley's pitch is renowned for being the biggest and the widest in the league as well. And I don't think we'll have anything to relate to. I mean, we played them after what was it? We had a Europa League game, didn't we? 2-3 days before the derby. Or was it after? I can't remember exactly the time frame, but we play week in, week out, more or less, with 3-4 days in between each game. Like, it doesn't mean anything. You just play a slightly weaker team in the replay. And also, like, in all due respect to
Vish.
Yeah, no, as in to... Who was it supposed to play again? I've literally...
Newport,
County. Sorry, yeah. So in no disrespect to Newport, I wouldn't think Spurs would play a full strength team against them either. I mean, you don't do what we did against Forest, which was completely stupid, but you would play a weakened team with your best players on the bench, for example, especially with a game like that coming up. I mean, I don't understand what we were doing, not having like a couple of proper first team starters on the bench at least. But I mean, in terms of that, I don't think Spurs are going to put out their 100% full strength team against Newport, especially when they got the derby, which is their Champions League final of the season.
Okay, Vish continues on, talks about Evans and Aubameyang played yesterday. That suggests 4 days to the window close. Now, what he's basically concerned, and I'll just abbreviate it, will Chelsea make a late sneaky bid for Aubameyang?
No, they prefer Peter Crouch. I think Crouch is better quality.
Tony?
I'm not concerned.
Again, this is people, it's human nature to be worried when you want something to happen and it's not happened yet. It worries you. So they see Chelsea running around all over the place looking for a striker, and they see us not signed, sealed, delivered Aubameyang yet. So they're putting two together and getting about 5,000. Chelsea are clearly looking to sign someone on a budget. Like, do you think if they wanted to spend that money, they would be looking at Peter Crouch and Ashley Barnes? They are. I don't know why. I'm not sure why Chelsea are penny pinching. I know a lot of people in the game think Conte won't be there next season. So maybe that has something to do with it. But Chelsea aren't going to go for looking to sign a Peter Crouch for about $500,000 to thinking, oh, that's fell through, let's go and spend 60-odd. And it's besides the point. And it's the type, they want a target man, clearly. They want someone who's strong and hold the ball up. But Aubameyang isn't that player, he runs in behind. So not only is he not in the budget they're looking to spend, he's not the type of player they're looking to buy. So I can see where the human nature is coming from, but it is literally putting two and two together and getting a stupid number that isn't four.
And actually, adding to that, I mean, the thing that doesn't make sense in particular about the whole link with Chelsea there is that we've got Sven, which is the driving force behind the deal, because obviously Sven and Aubameyang were the reason Aubameyang grew to what he is now, and there's still a good relationship, and they want Arsenal in there. And what people seem not to realise, and they have every right not to, because, and I'll say this point again, if I was looking at myself as a follower, not as a guy with the account, I think I was a twat. I wouldn't be able to believe it because we've had a lot of issues in the past, but people don't realise how promising our future is, and what the project we put forward now is a lot different to what it was when the likes of Van Persie and Fabregas were leaving, criticising our project, because we've got the best scout in the world, arguably. We've got one of the most notorious sporting directors who's known for pulling a deal and more or less convincing any player with an extensive contact list, and I'm not concerned for that, really. from that.
Zeko's not for sale either. Okay. It's only because I follow Roma as well. So, Vish continues. Have we given up on Malcolm Pavon, thus allowing Spurs to swoop in for their signatures? Personally, I would have preferred Martial and Rashford to being Arsenal targets. Their careers have been stiffed by Mourinho.
I'd prefer Messi and Ronaldo, ideally, but let's be realistic. They're just players that weren't available. In terms of Pavon and Malcolm, we've obviously touched on Malcolm.
And Lozano, we're apparently going for as well.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just going to say there. So they're on a list, Pavon, Malcolm, Lozano, and they're on a list of players. Like I said, you don't target just one player. You look for a type of player that you want. What was the other thing? On Tottenham coming in, I'm pretty sure, and I mentioned this the other day, I think, on the podcast, or it might have been when we was talking before the podcast, that I think they're going to sign Lucas Moura. It seems like that's going to get done now. And as Jack said, and I will completely agree, that they were never really in for Malcolm. They speculated a price in December, got told that they were way off, and that was them done with it. And it was a leak that came out to try and get Arsenal to get a move on by saying Tottenham will come back in. But as far as I'm aware, they're going to sign Lucas, who plays in the same position, and they were never really about Malcolm.
Just since you brought that up, that's not a bad sign. And what about 20 million?
I mean, the figures I've read are sort of between 25 and 30. A lot of people are criticising him, and I don't know if that's because they generally don't rate him or because they think he's going to Tottenham, so they have to automatically hate him. I'm not going to say I'm a big fan, but I think he's a good player. He beats people. He's got a lot of raw potential. His end product isn't the best, but it solves a need because teams are starting to defend deep against Tottenham in the same way they do against us, because a draw is now a good result against Tottenham, in the same way that for the majority of teams, a draw is against us. And where Lucas has that ability to beat a man, it unlocks space. As I said, his end product isn't the best, but if he can consistently beat men, which is what he tends to do, then I think it could be a good signing for them.
Yeah, the teams are very good at putting the pressure on Spurs to score with their strong defence.
Now, MAA Gunner, and I'm sure that's our old mate, used to be MAA Gamer, didn't it, Tony? So I think he may be a regular, but anyway. He asks a question, are you excited, if you're a FIFA player, are you excited now that you'll be able to have Salah, Mane and Aubameyang as a front three on FIFA? I don't play FIFA, so I've got no idea. MAA Gunner again. If we have more aspiration and direct approach in the transfer market now, who do you think you'll buy, or at least what positions do we think will strengthen in the future?
Every? Literally, we want to rejuvenate everything. The summer is going to be big. I mean, we're looking just to modernise everything and the club as a whole. So I presume
Are we looking at younger players for the future or now players, you think?
I think Sven's looking for younger players to come in. They'll be on the fringe, but they'll build their way up and they'll also start. And I think, put it this way, his track record's proven, and I trust him to bring players in who were for the future but are easy enough, good enough to play now. I don't think we have any reason to doubt that, and I think that's the argument which people don't really understand.
Now, one more from AA Gunner. What is the stock market and how does it affect the Aubameyang deal?
Tony, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so German
I've explained clubs, it many times.
The majority of German clubs, if not all of them, are partly fan-owned, which means they're stocks and shares, which anyone can go and buy. It's a public company, not a private company. If, say, for example, their director, Zorc, knew information that was going to affect their share price, he, by law, and it's the same law in England, has to reveal that information because it's almost like insider trading. If he knew something that was going to make the shares go massively up, he could go and buy loads of shares, then release that information. The shares go massively up and he's got to jump on the market. It's known as insider trading and it's very much illegal. So they anything official that comes in, they have to announce as soon as it comes in. Even if they're going to reject it, they have to announce it. What tends to happen with these companies, and I don't know if it's what's happened in this case, is Arsenal will, and this is why they flew over for the meetings. They will speak to them and they'll say, this isn't an official bid, but what if we were to offer £40 million, for example? And he'd say, well, if you were to do that, we would say no. And it gets around it because we're not making official bids, so there's nothing to report. But the whole transfer will be done in that sense. So that's why they've gone out there and they're speaking face-to-face, because if it's in emails, which it tend to would be, it'd be documented. And then there's a case for insider trading because they're saying, well, you knew this was going to happen. Whereas if it's in words, you can't prove that's how it was done. And I'm not saying that's what has happened in this case, but I'd be surprised if it's not, because that's how things tend to work when all information has to be made public, is that you just make sure that there's no official line to follow.
You reckon their shareholders would be getting a little bit nervous, huh? Would they be aware of this?
Well, they'll be as aware as the rest of us what's come out in the press, and some of them may know someone who knows someone who knows it's further along the line. But I'm not sure on the exact number, but they'll have thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of shareholders, because it's 50% fan-owned, I believe. So a lot of them may just be fans like you and I, but obviously they have an option to buy shares in their clubs. That's it. So a lot of them may have heard this information and dumped their shares and started selling their shares because that's actually what's happened. Their share price has gone down a few times since all this has started being leaked, because they know they're losing an asset, which would potentially make them a worse football team, which will potentially make them a worse business. So a lot of people started selling their shares, making the share price drop.
Okay. We're going to push through here, guys, because there's not many more, so I'll just give them a bit of a shout-out. Zane, thank you. He just asked about the Evans deal happening before Aubameyang deal. I don't know if you want to mention any there, boys, or we've pretty much covered that.
I mean, the only thing that's, I've just seen on my feed is that another one of those in-the-nose, as transfer accounts, it was... was tagged in it was from Transfer Checker. I don't know who they are personally, I don't really follow them, but they're saying that Arsenal are growing increasingly confident of bringing Evans to the club. Burnley's Tarkowski is another option on their radar. Aubameyang's deal is still not close to completion, but should speed up in the coming days. I don't know the account. I don't know the track record. I've literally just been tagged in something. As we've all said, the Aubameyang deal is just, didn't guys, everyone say it's a lockdown for a reason, hence why no information's come out. As in the deal's not an issue. It's not that there's been nothing happening, no difference. It's just that they've been silent for a reason.
On Evans, though, if they do not get rid of him this window, they're taking a big risk, because hasn't he got a clause in his contract that they can get rid of him for $3 million if they get relegated?
Yeah, but that would have been the case every other season they've been in the league as well. So they've just backed themselves to not get relegated, and you'd suggest they've got a better chance of staying up with Evans. So I've seen a lot of people report on that clause, but I don't see it as playing a part, personally.
Okay.
Incentives for West Brom to sell, it just makes more sense, just because of the clause and the fact that's now public knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. Spender, Misha, thank you. He's just talking about Evans' injury. Tony touched on that a little bit before, the hamstring injury. Guna Zekrist, fuck me, you can pronounce some of these names. Who do you think will replace Wenger? A list of candidates, he's asking. Look, go back to a couple of podcasts that we've done, because Tony did rattle off a list of candidates back then. But thank you for your question, but we just don't want to rehash over old stuff. Update on Evans, and looking forward to the podcast. I'll bring a spoon. Okay, boys, so that's the questions done and dusted. We'll battle on here. Swansea game coming up. Tony, what's your thoughts on the game coming up against Swansea, mate?
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone's going to look at this as their bottom of the league or in their bottom three. I'm not sure if they climbed a few places after beating Liverpool the other day. But it's never an easy place to go. It's they're defending resolutely. They obviously didn't concede against Liverpool, who everyone would argue, well, no one would argue that their attack's formidable at the moment. So look, they'll be happy with a 0-0 and they'll try and park the bus essentially and either hit us on the break or hit us from a counter-attack. I mean, sorry, from a set piece. So it won't be easy. An early goal would settle a lot of nerves because then they would have to come out and play football. But it won't be easy. And I know people are going to go, oh, we should be beating these 4-5-0 just by looking at the table. But if you've actually watched them, especially since Carvajal's come in, they're playing, I mean,
good
they're
football.
Playing well, but they're very hard to beat.
Liverpool.
I think they've only conceded the same amount of goals as us. I'm sure I heard that yesterday, which surprised me, but that may be wrong.
Didn't they keep a clean sheet against Liverpool or something?
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. And that obviously was their last home game. They obviously did have a cup game this weekend away to Notts County. So it's been a hard, boggy pitch. I don't think they're full strength team. I know they made some changes, but it won't be easy. I mean, I'd hope for a win, obviously, but I don't see a walkover, which I know a lot of people are expecting just by looking at the league table.
Yeah, they got a draw against Notts County. They beat Liverpool 1-0. 2-1 against Wolverhampton. Newcastle United draw. Wolverhampton again a draw. So they're not too bad a form. Jack, what's your take on the game coming up, Mark?
Very interested to see Mkhitaryan. I'm intrigued to see how wrong United fans will realise they've been in terms of the deal, because Mkhitaryan was a very different player at Dortmund than he was at United. And I think that he's going to come into a team where he's wanted to be at for a while. He didn't go. He didn't come for financial reasons in 2016. And I think he's going to have a lot of fire to strive for it. And I'm very excited to see what he can bring to us. And I'm also intrigued to see the formation changes, because, I mean, I think it's safe to say our plans to start looking at going two up top, whereas other than Alba takes place. But I think now, I don't know, I'm curious if we're going to go back to that 4-2-3-1 with like a midfielder on the right side, which will be a Mkhitaryan, like we used to do a Ramsey, or even if we go to like a 4-2, just play twos, like from defensive midfield, attacking mid and up front, and see if he play alongside Ozil in more of a Santi role. Or I'm very intrigued to see how Wenger approaches this, because if he gets the tactics right, then the rest of the season could be, from Swansea onwards, could be something that's quite fruitful. But then again, looking at the game, it's a difficult game to go to, the timing of which does not help, because I feel that timings of games actually correlate a lot on the result. So for example, games which are either really early on a Sunday or really late but stupidly far don't exactly have the fans buzzing as much as others would. And for me, I don't understand why the TV deals and the league can choose the derbies to choose roughly what months they're in for police issues. And then again, they don't regulate like the furthest possible travel for midweek game weeks like Swansea is, because Swansea's not easy to get to. And it's quite, in my opinion, that is one that really shouldn't be considered for a Tuesday 7:45 that isn't even on. I mean, it's not even on TV, is it?
Oh, I've got it over here, but I'm not sure about you boys.
No, it's not on UK TV.
Exactly. I think it's disgraceful that they give us that sort of fixture and not even put TV on it, because do you know how difficult it is? I mean, put it this way, all coaches, from what I understand, are leaving at like 12:30.
Well, from the Emirates, they're leaving at 12:15, because I'm on one.
Are you excited for that?
No.
How long's the journey? 6 hours?
I don't know. They reckon 4 coming back, but it won't be that. It'll be longer than that. But yeah, so just for anyone who's listening like abroad, and obviously you working on different times. So for the fans, I'm leaving the Emirates at midday and the kickoff is 7:45. So I have to get to the Emirates 7 hours and 45 minutes before kickoff. Again.
Why is that, Tony?
There's no trains because Swansea is in the middle of nowhere and it's a Tuesday night. So by the time, I think there's a train there, but by the time the game's finished, it will obviously be close to 10 o'clock. And then getting to the station will probably take half hour. So there's no trains that late at night coming back to London. You can either drive, and it's about a 3.5 hour drive from London, or get the coach, which Arsenal, to be fair to them, have subsidised. So it's only £10 per person, which is obviously really cheap. But the coach is limited to 58 miles an hour. So it would take around 5 to 6 hours to get back. So we'll be getting back at probably around 4 in the morning. And we would have had to get to the Emirates at midday. So it would be sort of a 16-hour day for a 90-minute football match.
There's a diehard fan right there. Quick prediction on the lineup, boys, and a quick prediction on the score.
I'll just get mine out of the way quickly. Same as last week, but Mkhitaryan in for Iwobi, staying in the same shape, barring any injuries that I don't know about. And score 10-0.
Just a quick point before I go to Jack. El Neni had a really good game last game. Do you look at bringing him in?
He wasn't. That's why I said the same as last week.
Oh, same as last week. I thought he meant the same as the last Premier League game.
Okay. Well, that was the same team.
Yep, okay.
They played the same team in both. Oh, apart from, sorry, check back in for Ospina, but the same team has played Palace except for Iwobi out and Mkhitaryan in, I would imagine. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he stayed the same, because he'll say Mkhitaryan's only had 4 days training or whatever it is.
Okay. Jack?
It's quite an unconventional. It's a bit different than what we saw the other day. So my team, I'd start checking goal. Realistically, it's the only option. Then I'd go, I go for a back four of Bellerin, Koscielny, Mustafi, and I'd keep Monreal there. I don't think I'd start for this one, because I just think Monreal's in a tremendous amount of form. Getting involved in 4 goals in 46 minutes, shows that when you're playing at the back. And then, so I'd change to a 4-2-3-1. Because I think that's something that we would be looking into potentially as one of our season options. But I'd go El Neni and Jack in the central midfield role. The three in front, I would go Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Iwobi. And I would go Lacazette up top.
Okay, interesting. Prediction?
I'm not one to give predictions when it comes to scores. Okay.
That's why I say 10-0 every week.
Tony's always saying. Okay, I think that's about a wrap, boys. Have you got anything else, Jack, if you want to add anything else, transfer news, anything you need to get off your chest or anything, mate, go for it.
I'm not going to lie. Actually, just a point in terms of just like a bit of... Just something that's always been something that's been on my mind, and it's always I've always thought against it, and I think a lot of people need to take this into account, and it's that... What people need to remember, and I've seen this a lot, and it's something that I find really quite hard to deal with at away games in particular, but as a whole, is that we have very good fans, and people don't realise that, and people don't take into account how loyal our away fan base is in particular. And I think a lot of fans and a lot of people online got a lot of stick and say this and that about us, but I don't think people really respect how loyal of a club Arsenal and our fan base are, considering that people always say that we're spoiled and we should be praising the fact that we're not in the bottom of the table and whatnot. But we're all putting up with a time which is not acceptable for Arsenal Football Club. And I think that it's safe to say that as fans, especially who travel home in particular, we get a lot of abuse, for example, at games for showing frustration. And I think that we have every right to. And I think that when other fans look upon us in a negative way because of that, I think it's really quite uncalled for. And in addition to that as well, if you look at something like Arsenal Fan TV, and I know that people have their opinions on it all, but people don't look at the guys on there in what they say. They don't actually listen. They just look at them as characters. And I think that if people actually listen to the points they're making about the game, that a lot of the lads speak well, and they speak with a lot of proper reason and cause. And I think that people also overlook that. And I think the only reason why people look at it as a comedy is only because people don't watch Arsenal Fan TV for the content that people are speaking about. And I think that's something that people need to take a step back, not be the first one to jump the gun and take the piss, but actually to listen to what we all say. Because one thing I've noticed as well is that I've been saying a lot of controversial, what was then been controversial, i.e. Everton, I said that Jack should be captain, Everton away, and I got slated. And people were very quick to jump the gun, and that's just an example now where the whole fan base more or less are back in that point of view, which is something which from next season is actually looking like it's done. And Jack Wilshere is going to be, as it stands, as our captain next season as part of his new deal, which is in the process of being signed off. But I just think there's a whole people just look upon a whole fan base in a perspective where they don't actually take a step back and put anything into account, just in regards to our loyalty and also the way that we speak about our club. And I think that's something that the wider world needs to be aware of. Because I've got a lot of respect for those who attend games and who show the loyalty, and also all the fans abroad who will wake up at stupid time to watch the games. But the fact that people jump the gun and accuse us all of being bad fans and all this, it's something that needs to be addressed. So I've got a lot of respect for Arsenal fans who are loyal and as a whole, where, no matter where you are in the world, and Arsenal fans and Arsenal to Fan TV, because I think they get a lot of unfair criticism.
Yeah, Warren's well said, and you can follow Jack at the plug AFC.
Can I just get onto one thing before we wrap up? Because it was a question we kind of missed earlier, and I don't want to be accused of skipping questions.
Yeah, mate.
So someone asked, why is Kroenke still buying shares if the takeover is in
the... We didn't get onto the takeover points, did we?
No, so I mean, I'll just run through that question quickly, because it's the only one we directly got asked. But, so I'm not saying it's imminent, but if it's in the pipeline, why is he still buying shares? Put simply, is that when you take over something, when you try and buy 100% or take over majority control, there's a premium that comes with it. So say, for example, Arsenal shares at the moment are running at 25,000 a share, which is a little bit light, but it makes the maths easier. If he has 100 shares and there's only 110 out there, you have to pay a premium when you're taking over. So you may pay 1,000 more per share, for example. So the more share he has, the more his premium is worth, and the more negotiating power he has. If he only had 49%, then his premium would be worth nothing, because you could get the controlling share from elsewhere. So him buying shares makes business sense, whether or not you believe a takeover is either imminent or happening at all. It is there that Kroenke's doing this for business reasons. He's either got more shares in the club that the value is only going to increase due to its London location and performance, or his premium is going to increase when he eventually sells it. So it does make sense that he's still buying shares, and it doesn't rule out any other takeover. And there's also reports from an ASD, Arsenal Supporters Trust board member, that Usmanov has been sounding out people for the possibility of a takeover, which surprises absolutely no one, because we've been speaking about it for months.
And to add to that, it's like buying a property. People buy let's say office blocks by price per square foot, and it's basically the same when you're looking at the takeover for a club. And that I think the deal that will be put on the table will just be, will be like price per share rather than as a whole, and I think obviously with all the premiums. And I think that what people also need to realize about this takeover is that if people start claiming that they've got the knowledge of takeovers and whatnot, it was the whole thing and the whole knowledge of it started literally by me messaging Clock End Talk, as tweeted, and as you guys know, this is on the Twitter, basically denied it, and then 2 days, 3 days later got information from one of your sources about it. And it was in the link of GBF Biochemical, which is obviously Matthew Flamini's startup, which has a scheduled market worth of around 20 billion, plus Usmanov, and the fact that Kroenke and Usmanov's relationship, and the fact that Usmanov even invested into Flamini. I mean, I think it all kind of correlates. And the timeline is more a case of when Kroenke feels that he doesn't need Arsenal to make any more profit, which is what he used the club for, and that it sounded out that his stadium, his usage of it in an event on a massive scale coming up in about a decade's time, but the fact they're planning that now, as soon as that's agreed, then stuff will start rolling forward. But it's complex, and as I've tweeted and as I've said, and all they want to do is that they want to make Arsenal great again. They're Arsenal fans. They don't care about the profit they can make. They just want to come and bring the club to the great days of which it once had. And if that's the case, fair play to them. And I've got a lot of respect if that's the motivation behind the takeover, which is something which is being really carefully detailed due to the complexity of it.
Okay. Just quickly too, and I always forget about our Facebook page. Craig Dixon, he often likes and comments on our stuff on Facebook, but he asked the question for you boys last podcast, so we better get to it, which type of ties in with what we're talking about anyway. So Craig asks, are we potentially seeing the effect of Sven and Rule, although not officially started yet, on transfers, as it seems Wenger is no longer in complete control over them now?
He doesn't have control as a whole. At all, there's no control. It's now solely I think, more or less segregated. So Wenger doesn't even really have the final say, because, I mean, from what I understand, Sven's actually set, like, just completely disregarded Wenger's wanted players.
So just explain, how does the transfer, like, obviously Wenger goes, does Wenger go, I want that player, and how's it work?
In the past, from what we've been led to know by the club, from Gazidis' statements and whatnot, they've got this warehouse in Cambodia with a load of data, and Wenger watches the data, and he sounds out players he likes from that, and then they send the scouts to watch them. But it's just a really long and slow process, and by the time we've actually sounded out that we want them and then we get the right scores, they've already gone to another club. But then normally Wenger would be, he'd be given scouting report, he'd give scouts reports to go and scout for, and they'd bring reports back and he'd choose who he wanted and sound them out. But unfortunately, and despite the fact that Wenger's made some absolutely remarkable signings for this club, and I do not ever want to take away that, because I'm not Wenger out and I'm not Wenger in. I'm very neutral. I don't really get involved in it. But pardon me, sorry. He's also signed some absolute shockers. I mean, some of the players we've seen since the Emirates who've come in, regardless of people saying about our budget and we're on a low scale, Marouane Chamakh, Andre Santos, Sebastian Squillaci, Mikel Silvestre, they should not have. Well, I don't necessarily agree they should have been entitled the right to wear the red and white. And I think that was a hard, I think the fact that we've taken that power away, and the fact that Wenger's ego isn't on the transfer point of view, is something that will really push the club forward, because we've got individuals now who've been brought in and paid for, which is against Wenger's ethos, and as well as Kroenke's. We've paid to release some of them from their contracts. Like it was a proper deal that had to take place. But we're in a stage now where we can sign a young player for 30, 40 million, and we don't need to doubt it because he's from the French league, because we know Sven's got a proven track record, and it's all something that the power's been taken away, and it's now very much in the hands of Michelin's findings with Sinelli's power of pulling the player away from their club.
Is this that DNA machine? Is it getting the punt now?
I've got no idea, but it's been a failure, whatever it was.
That's what I mean. It's been a big failure.
I mean, I don't know why they've even come out and say it's Cambodia, because it makes it seem like it's even more rubbish. It's like saying that they've got some random like warehouse in Madagascar. Like it's just it's like the same sort of concept, it's just a complete nonsense. Like, it doesn't sound like it's anything legit.
Just cast your mind back, and Tony, you can chime in as well. Has there been one good signing from the Stat DNA machine thing?
It depends what you see as good. Look, I clearly don't rate Mohamed Elneny, as anyone that listens to this podcast will know, and I've often got abuse about that. But £5 million, it's a good signing. Good squad player for £5 million. We got off the £10 million for him in the summer. So it depends on what aspect you're looking at. Did they, in a sense, identify a gem in terms of value? Yes. Did they identify someone that would improve our first team? No. But was that, when you spend £5 million on a player, do you expect them to improve your first team? Probably not. I don't know if Holding was a Stats DNA player. I don't think he was. Lucas, you could argue, a lot of fans would tell you he's a good player, but he never made it, so you'd say that didn't work. So it's difficult. We haven't signed anyone that's affected our first team, but I don't think that's what it was meant for, because the top-end players, the likes of your Aubameyang and your Mkhitaryans, you don't need a computer to tell you they're good.
Mm. I mean, that's interesting, and I'm going to relate that back actually to the point before about Wenger's power with the transfers as well. I find that we've actually made a lot of shockers in terms of sales. I mean, I'm sure you guys will agree, but I think Wenger's issues with players and his egos with them due to issues which he hasn't been able to look over has cost us losing some seriously fantastic footballers. I mean, Wojciech Szczęsny is one as a whole. I mean, why we let him go, I have no idea. Because Szczęsny's even now loves Arsenal. Like, despite the fact he's playing very well at Juve, but he's an Arsenal fan. He still posts about the club on likes every post by all the players and whatnot. And Szczęsny, I don't think that smoking issue was something that meant he should have left. I mean, Jack Wilshere did the same. Jack Wilshere is now likely to be our captain next season. Szczęsny is a desire for the club. He loves it. And he's the only one player recently who's got the same sort of mentality as Jack, which is the love for the club. And he's a top goalkeeper. I mean, he's basically chucking Buffon out of the team with his performances. He's got, like, what was it, 10 clean sheets? For Szczęsny?
10 sheets in 14 games.
Yeah. I mean, and then we've got Cech, who can't, who doesn't have the agility to actually get to half the goal. And I don't understand why that we'd let a keeper of blatant class, despite the fact he had, what, half of us, like, three or four bad games. I don't know why he's been shipped out and frozen out, went on over 2 years, wouldn't get in the team, and lost his place to Ospina. And then we went and signed Cech, who's, in no disrespect to Cech, he's one of the greatest ever Premier League managers, but not when he was us. He's old. And while we get rid of a young goalkeeper who has shown world-class attributes in games anyways, but his evidence clearly to even grow more into like a greater level, in like even that of players like Buffon, who he's obviously been signed to replace, why we would let him go for £10 million and let him even go in the first place, I've got no idea. Because that 2 years of loan, that 2 year loan to Roma completely knocked his value as a whole anyways. I mean, if that wasn't the case, I don't think we would have got 40, 50 million from Mazzetti, because he's worth it. But
I just, an outsider looking in, I think he's obviously, he wasn't Wenger's golden boy, and he's
exactly, and that's the issue with
obviously
Wenger.
Upset arrogant. Somebody there, yeah. Okay, boys, well, I think that'll wrap us up, eh?
Yep.
Got anything else? Yep. It's good. Well, it's been great to have you, Jack, and you're always welcome to come on the podcast, mate. And
anytime.
Have a talk and, talk transfer news, or even just talk about Arsenal.
I mean, I think we all love our club, and everyone needs to realise that we don't all go to the game to slag off the board or Wenger and all that. We also need to go and back the team, get behind what the team means, what the canon, the history and everything. And everyone needs to support the club. And I think that if everyone can get behind the club, once all this is rectified and the changes of the hierarchy have been made, I think that we could be onto really great things at Arsenal. And I think the future's bright.
Yes, I agree. Okay, remember, at The Plug AFC, and I don't know how often you make an appearance on Arsenal Fan TV, but I have seen you there
every
once
game.
Or twice. More every or game, okay. There yeah. you go. As always, Tony, thank you, buddy.
No worries, thanks for having me.
And, thank you very much.
No worries, you've been listening to The Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast, and we'll be back next week. Thank you.